Hi, this is Mark Wade, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 375th episode spectacular of Longbox Heroes. Joe and Todd joining you. Todd, how are we doing today?
Fantastic. 375. I never thought we'd get here. No, really. I never thought we'd get here.
Well, you know, obviously that's everything kind of totaled up together when we combine the numbering.
It's legacy numbering.
It's legacy numbering.
Is or armacy numbering.
It's what?
Armacy numbering.
Armacy?
Yeah, like legacy numbering.
Oh my goodness. Show's over, everybody. We had a good run.
That's right. 375 ends it.
Yep. No, I'm just hanging up on Todd. This is the full episode.
Right.
No. I've dealt with these horrible puns for so long.
Just terrible jokes at this point.
Right, but if you also include the 160 After Darks, we've done a lot of podcasting.
We have.
Mm-hmm. If I do my gazintas.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say liberally.
What about conservatively?
I don't like to talk politics on the show.
Neither do I.
We have done almost 450 hours of podcasting.
Probably more somehow.
Probably more. I was being conservative there with my numbers, but
even though you said liberal.
Right. Well, again, I said I don't like to talk politics on the show.
That is true.
That's Profane Arguments' job.
That's right. They do it well. I heard.
Mm-hmm. Todd, a big podcast guy.
I am. I am the podcast guy on this show.
Gets all of his Audible books through their click-through.
I do. I have all my podcasts come to me through Carrier Pigeon.
Right. Well, that leads us into one of our news stories that we're going to talk about on the 375th episode of Spectacular. What superhero is getting his own exclusive storytelling podcast? Or something like that. What World Wrestling Entertainer could be showing his CGI blue nether regions on HBO?
What?
And who's getting ripped off on art? No. This is another issue of Todd and that other guy.
Oh, boy.
This is a much wider scope story.
Mm-hmm.
And all that, in the news, we've got convention notes, of course, and it seems as though every time the conventions come around, there's yet another, this is the mark picture to get.
There's always a mark picture.
There's a new one, like the double mark picture, but we'll get into that in conventions, digital sales and freebies, what we read this past week, which is Killer Be Killed number 14, Super Sons Annual number 1, and Batmanual number 2. What we're looking forward to coming out this week, we're gonna shake the crime stick to see if there was any Todd's Art Attack this week.
Mm-hmm.
And also the revelation of who wins our fantabulous 375th episode spectacular Quantum and Woody contest.
It's like we knew what we were doing.
Almost. Also, Todd and Joe have issues as we talk about a classic Superman story in Superman Annual number 11, and we're going to unpack the entirety of the Crisis on Earth X CW TV crossover and more ways that you, and I'm pointing at you in your ear, listener of this podcast, can affect the upcoming TV section of this show.
Lots of stuff.
It's a busy show, Todd. I'm glad we didn't waste the last hour talking about nothing.
Busy show with lazy hosts.
Right. So, I kind of fumbled my way through that that podcast thing. So, it was announced that sometime next year, exclusively through Stitcher, there's going to be a 10-episode podcast audio drama called Wolverine the Long Night. I'm not sure if it's going to be through Stitcher or Stitcher Premium. This is, I would assume, a takeoff of what Marvel has been doing over the last year or so, where they do like an audio book, but it's more of an audio drama, as opposed mm-hmm. to partnering directly with a company like Stitcher, where it's like, here's a story that we have, it's going to be broken up into 10, you know, weekly chapters, and Bob's your uncle.
Right.
They do all these sort of audio dramas where there's multiple people reading the things, there's sound effects, there's music, as opposed to your typical audiobook, where it's usually just like one person reading the story to you.
It's like a narrator.
Right. I know in particular there's multiple narrators. If you go to those sites where you can get audiobooks from, you could search. It's like, oh, well, my favorite narrator is Biggity Boo Boo, and that's who I want reading this. Or sometimes they'll kind of stunt cast. I'm not sure if you're aware of the upcoming film Ready Player One.
Right.
Which is based on the book of the same name, and they have Will Wheaton as the narrator of that.
Mm. The guy from the Big Bang Show.
Right. Not Wesley Crusher or what's his face? Richard Dreyfuss from Stand By Me.
I don't know. Wesley Crusher Creel would be a good character.
Oh my goodness.
But
anyway, what are your thoughts on this? You asked me to put this in the show notes, so you're Mr. Podcast.
I'm Mr. Audio Plays, though. I have listened to a bunch of the Doctor Who ones, and I actually thought when I saw this, I actually thought this was really cool, because I remember getting into like radio dramas when I was about like, I want to say 8, 7. Was because it was right around 1980, after Empire Strikes Back came out. I'll never forget being at my aunt's house, and the radio was on, we were listening to it, and I forget what channel it was on, and it was just like, oh, like, next weekend is part one of The Empire Strikes Back, the radio play, and I was like, I need to sit down by the radio and listen to this. And I did, and I remember loving it with my cousin. We got together, like, for the whole thing. I don't remember much about, like, the actual radio play, like who did, if there was anybody famous doing the voices or anything like that. But I remember getting into it and finding, like, later on tapes of stuff. And then, like I said, nowadays you could just download stuff, but Doctor Who has their audios with the older doctors and stuff like that. So I think this is really cool. And I think, you know, if it's not expensive or like, you know, cheap, and it's going to be, you could do different characters. I would love to see other, you know, companies do it. I want to see a JLI audio drama. That's what I want. And I'd be happy with that. So I hope it leads to more stuff like this.
So of course, me being Mr. Negative Nancy with all this.
Right.
I will be listening to this. Certainly checking it out. Now, the question I have is whether or not this is going to be part of Stitcher or Stitcher Premium, which is one of the ways that they get you. I could certainly see this being part of Stitcher Premium.
Right.
The other thing is, much like Stitcher and every other audio app or whatever, or podcasting thing, iTunes, whatever it is, you have to have the app for whatever that player is downloaded on your device that you listen to your shows on, and that's typically people who have fancy MP3 players. I'm not a person who has a fancy MP3 player. I found the MP3 player that I'd like, and I usually just get that version of it all the time. Unless they up the model, then I'm like, okay, I gotta get the new model of it, whatever. You can't get apps on it. You have to download the things and put them on. I like to do things my way. And I do have a Stitcher Premium membership, because over the summer they did a gimmick where it's typically like $10 a month or something, right? You know, it's like, mm-hmm. oh, you get the first X amount of days free, use the code LongBoxHeroes or whatever it is. But then after that, it's $8 a month, $9 a month, $10 a month. I don't even know what it is. But over the summer, they had a deal where it was $8 for the year.
Right.
And one of the things that they had done at that time was Gilbert Gottfried does two podcasts, one where he interviews a celebrity, another one where it's just like, oh, do you want to hear Gilbert talk about Jaws the Revenge for 20 minutes?
I would listen to that.
Do you want to hear Gilbert Gottfried sing old songs from the 50s? You know, this is the show for you. And that's the one that they moved over to Stitcher Premium. And I'm like, I want that show. And it was like right around the time that they did that deal. So I'm like, all right, I'm getting that for Gilbert and Gilbert specifically. My subscription to that doesn't run out until July. So even if this Wolverine thing is part of Stitcher Premium, I have it. But then I have my workaround site so that I can actually rip the files from the app itself and put them on my MP3 player. I'm doing a lot of work, Todd, just for me.
Well, here's the thing.
You think my lists in triplicate are bad.
Right. Well, here's something I don't like. I read in the article that I had read that it's going to be on Stitcher in the spring of 2018 before being released on other podcast outlets in the fall.
Other podcast outlets in the fall.
Right, so they're probably going to be like Stitcher. Like, if you want it early, be a Stitcher, not a belly itcher, and get something, you know, pay them or whatever. But then maybe it'll be, you know, available down the line for free or less on, you know, come, you know, 6 months later. The way I look at it is I'll just borrow yours.
Right, you could have my login, sure.
Yes.
So I don't know, I'll be looking forward to this. We'll keep you posted. Maybe we'll do a podcast review on the show.
A podcast, a review of a podcast?
Yes.
Is that legal? That's like art, I think.
We'll find out, won't we?
Mm-hmm.
So another bit of news, or at least rumor and innuendo. And typically, we don't like to talk about rumor and innuendo on the show.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's the perfect storm of some of our favorite topics, we have no choice but to talk about it. So as you know, they are looking to do a Watchmen TV show on HBO. I think Damon Lindelof is involved somehow, the creator of Lost.
Mm-hmm.
And last week, on his Instagram, John Cena, without comment, put up images of the Watchmen characters, specifically Dr. Manhattan.
Okay.
Now, this could mean nothing, because John sometimes puts wacky stuff up on his Instagram. Or maybe John Cena is going to be in the Watchmen TV show.
Does that mean Bella's going to be one of the, what was the female character?
Right, they're just going to take episodes of Total Bellas from yep. the E! Network and just put an Alan Moore filter over them and just say, it's like, saving all this production cost, done and done.
Here comes, who's going to be Rorschach? Masked wrestler.
Now, I'll say this. You want to go crazy? I say you have John Cena play everybody.
Oh my God.
You want to get people talking. People already, there's camps out there that already have negative connotations about John Cena, and there's people out there that have negative connotations about anything outside of Watchmen that's not done directly by Alan Moore. Mm-hmm. So let's put it all together and let's just say we're trolling the world with this one.
I would love to see just John Cena come out with the Rorschach mask, like the tiny towel. And it's just like, dun, 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 dun. He like puts it on.
The thing on his, the pattern on Rorschach's matches what's on my hat.
Yes, and he just, it's the mask and it goes on. That would be fantastic.
Now, and just to further troll people, as I said, John Cena plays every, at least male roles, of course. You can actually cast actual females. Let's not take roles away from female actresses. Mm-hmm. But as the part of Ozymandias, we have that as Roman Reigns.
And oh my God, the big dog.
Have WB Films produce it. They have a great track record of putting out quality entertainment, like the Marine series.
Oh, Bob, I'm just thinking of actual wrestlers that I'm actually like casting this now, like Bob Backlund as the old Night Owl.
Right.
I'm just trying to think who the young Night Owl would be. Just stuff like that. That would be fantastic. Just use all WWE superstars and you're good to go.
Now, there is one thing that I have to doff my cap and begrudgingly give credit to Phil, the Talking Dead commentator from Chicago, for.
I know who you mean, yes.
He had pitched, when he was still in the World Wrestling Entertainment, that WWE should just do remakes of, like, classic 80s movies
mm-hmm.
with all the WWE guys. Like, what if they just took all the current WWE roster guys and did a remake of, let's say, Cannonball Run?
Oh, I would love that.
Right! See, that would be a fantastic movie. Or you take, like, Police Academy, but it's all the but it's like the New Day, instead of, like, Steve Guttenberg and, you know, whoever else, right? Like, Michael Winslow, whatever.
Oh my goodness, and, the Three Amigos starring the New Day.
Three Amigos starring The Shield.
Yeah, oh, that'd be even better!
Right! So, these are properties, and like, you know, everything gets remade today. RoboCop, Total Recall, Ghostbusters, you know, everything gets remade, or a soft reboot, or whatever it is. You want to have it be a soft reboot where you pay homage to the people that came before it, and you have a scene where Burt Reynolds and Dean Ambrose, like, I don't know, share a cigar or something. Perfect. You've bridged the two continuities together. Now we can move forward, right?
Dom DeLuise.
Yeah, I think Dom DeLuise is long past, sir.
I think he's alive.
Let me see. Let me go to isabevagodaalive.com.
Yes, that's right. Hey, it's Dom DeLuise and Samoa Joe.
This claims that Dom DeLuise has been dead for 8 years.
I don't think that's true.
All right.
I think Dom is alive and well, and Andy Kaufman-ing us all. It's a hard phrase to say.
But yeah, so again, this is just rumor and innuendo. We don't even really talk about like TV news unless it's something big, and we try to keep the wrestling show for where everyone wants it talked about, including Todd, which is on After Dark.
Or at the comic shop.
Or at the comic book shop. I think Don Morocco's still alive. I think he can play the comedian.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
I've been working on my impression of somebody else's impression of Don Morocco. But now's not the time to do it. Moving on. Any news about John Cena being in any comic book movie is going to be on this show.
Okay.
All right, so the last bit of news, and Todd, you're going to have to spearhead this one, because obviously this one directly affects you, or this is a part of the comic book world that you have a little bit more in tuneness with.
Mm-hmm.
There have been more and more big name artists. When I say big names, I mean your Jim Lee's, your Todd McFarlane's, your Rob Liefeld's, people like that are having their work forged and sold, passed off as certified legitimate art from them.
And I mean, yes, now we're talking certified. I've seen stories before where it's like, oh, you know, like, hey, Jim Lee, here's a link that I've tweeted you. Is this something you did on eBay? No, I've never done that. Yes, that was something I did. And I've seen that, like, all right, somebody, you know, made a forged thing, but now we have the CGC or CGX or whatever they're called, all the people who do this now, that they're starting to trickle through, that there's actual forgeries that have been certified by someone. And this whole thing was designed to bypass that. And for somebody like me, it's terrifying because, you know, I try to stay away from that kind of stuff online, risky stuff. But now to go, oh, well, this is certified. You're getting what you paid for, and it's guaranteed, and they're slipping through the cracks. I'm surprised that this didn't happen sooner, but I'm not sure how it could actually happen, because most of this stuff is you're supposed to witness it from the table of the creator to where you get it slabbed and stuff like that. But I would cry if I bought like a Jim Lee piece or something expensive and found out it was forged, and especially if it was, you know, certified. I would demand my money back from this company somehow.
Right, which puts them in a sticky situation. That's CBCS.
Right.
Is the company. They're one of the grading sites, of course. They also deal in comics themselves. But they also do signatures, and original art, and, you know, obviously that's what we're speaking about here. And obviously, a lot of this is a gray area if you're buying stuff from a third party, or you're not buying it in person from the artist in question, or through their verified site.
Right.
I think with this in general, you're taking a risk in not buying it directly from the creator themselves. When it comes to something like this, a one-of-one piece of art. And I know that's not the easiest way for a lot of people, whether conventions don't come to your town, or you can't get out to that person physically, or whatever it is, this might be your only option.
Now, in defense, I would say there's a lot of art, big-time dealers of art, comic book art, like there's Albert Moy, and there's a Romita Man is another one. But like I would be more trusting of those guys because these are guys who have been in the business a long time and can spot, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like fakes and no art. So like I don't think just alone, like one-on-one with the artist. I think there are some big reputable. I mean, it'd be like anything. It'd be like getting like an art, regular paintings of famous artists from an auction house. You know, like you didn't get it from Picasso, but they're saying it's Picasso. you know right. what I mean? So, like, you have to do some of that. Like, I think when it's the nameless entity on eBay, that's more where you run the risk. You know what I mean? But, like I said, I've never shirked away from buying original art from some of these bigger art people because usually they're their reps, too. Sometimes they'll have, like, 10 or 12 or 15 artists that they rep, and they'll do commissions and stuff like that. So there's more to it than just that, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have to ask you, being the art collector that I know, did you go and check your stuff to see if maybe something of yours was a fake?
No, because I don't... Like you said, I've gotten most of my stuff from either reputable art dealers or from the people themselves, so I'm not really worried about too much stuff, you know what I mean? Like... Or like it would take a lot to counterfeit a page, you know what I mean? And I don't think I have any counterfeit pages, but we'll talk about that off air later.
Okay, because my next question, of course, was going to be, do you know anyone or yourself, of course, who have gotten a forgery or saw a forgery or had to go through this?
No, not nobody that I know of. Personally has ever gotten something that they suspected of being a forgery. I think there's a lot of, unless you have a good artist, it would take a lot to forge stuff, which I'm surprised there hasn't been more of. But like I said, I don't think knowing what I know that if I have a piece that I don't know is forged, it's one of the many that I have. It's not like you're going to be, oh, like 25% forgeries. It just didn't happen with old stuff. And especially old stuff is easier because you needed, it's harder to forge because they had word balloons on them back in the day. And, you know, they were glued on separately. And so it'd be harder to forge older stuff, which is mostly what I have. I rambled there for a minute.
Well, no, I'm concerned that I don't want to see you, my friend, get ripped off.
See, I'm more likely to get ripped off by paying an artist than not getting art.
Right, that's why I get so upset about it.
Which happens with a lot of artists, more than you think.
I can think of one.
Oh, there's other ones. There's notorious people in the industry.
Well, notorious people in the industry, but anyone that you've dealt with.
Yes and no.
Okay.
I've had a few others that have taken me a long time to get my product back.
If at all.
That's true, if at all.
Mm-hmm. So before this gets too dark,
mm-hmm.
Let's move on to conventions, Todd.
Okay.
So there's a bunch of conventions going on this weekend all over the world, Todd. Starting in Germany... with the German Comic Con in Westfalenhallen. A lot of big name folks over there. Wentworth Miller, world famous. Be discussed later on the show. Robert Englund, a.k.a. Freddy Krueger. Carl Weathers is going to be there.
Former Raider.
Right. Jaleel White. And Allison Hannigan. Who I'm a big fan of.
I know who Allison Hannigan is. She's from Buffy and How I Met Your Mother, right?
Right. And the American Pie films.
Oh, yeah, that's right. She went to band camp.
Mm-hmm, she sure did. And then this weekend also is the first of the Seamus families away from Wizard conventions. The Ace right. Comic-Con in Long Island, New York. It's the entire top build cast of the current Justice League movie, except Ben Affleck.
Mm-hmm, because he's sad.
Right, because he's sad. Then, a ton of World Wrestling Entertainers. If you weren't sick and tired of World Wrestling Entertainment talk already. The Bellas will be there.
Mm.
The Hardy Boys will be there.
Ooh, I wonder what persona they'll have.
Mm, including Woken Matt Hardy. Now, I forget what you called him, but you had some sort of cute name for Corey Graves.
Oh, neck tattoo.
Neck tattoo. And The Undertaker is going to be there.
I wonder which hat he'll have on.
The Undertaker?
Yeah, I like the big brimmed hat. That's my favorite.
I think Undertaker will be dressed in Booger Red, Taker Care of Business. American Badass era Undertaker.
No, I want the overcoat and the big brimmed hat.
I'll be on the lookout for Mark photos from this weekend. I think I'm correct in this one.
I can only imagine what the Justice League cost.
Well, let's talk about it.
Single, one group. I imagine you have to take a mortgage out in the house for the group.
Okay.
Joe's looking up stuff now.
And there's other folks there as well, but those are like the top build folks, you know?
Get your pictures taken.
Let's start with Harry Cavill, right?
Right.
And there's a Justice League panel as well.
Oh.
Okay. Okay.
Did you find it?
So, Ezra Miller is $75.
That ain't bad.
Everybody else is $175 a clip.
That's not bad.
Now,
that's honestly not.
Okay. Now, if you want to get the full cast, it's only available with the VIP pass.
Ooh.
Okay.
And then you're Batman in that picture.
Okay. So I'm looking to see what the... Now, come on. They make you jump through a lot of hoops. Now, they're all sold out, so unfortunately it doesn't show you what the price is.
Oh, I can only imagine for the VIP. I'm guessing $1,000.
Yeah, unfortunately. And, like, it's real weird, too, because they are doing a cap on them as well. A lot of the individual days are all sold out and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's $175 a clip. Except for Ezra Miller, who's $75.
As he should be.
How much is The Undertaker?
I hope he's more.
Undertaker sold out, man.
Uh-oh.
Doesn't even show up. But you can get the Woken Hardy Boys for $65. I think that's your deal of the weekend.
And don't accidentally delete that picture.
Oh, gross. But I think where your real money is to get the plane, go over to Germany, and drop the $120 to get your picture taken with Wentworth Miller.
Oh, there you go. Bring the parka.
But Steel City Con is this weekend as well in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Dreyfuss is going to be there, tying it into previous conversation. Right. Diamond Dallas Page of the World Wrestling Entertainment is going to be there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Todd, if you want to make money, if you're going, and we might have people who are going to that con, there's a very good chance these are the two people that you got to get the double picture with.
Okay.
You got to get the picture taken with Zach Ward and Yano Anaya. Now, Todd, you're going to say, I have no idea who these people are.
I have no idea who these people are.
But, Todd, it's the Christmas time.
Wait a minute.
Go ahead.
So help me, he had yellow eyes.
Zach Ward is Scott Farkas, and Yano Anaya is Grover Dill, his crummy little toady. That's right, Todd. There's your Money Mark photo right there.
If anybody could get my DVD copies of Titus, the comedy, signed by him, which I loved that show, by the way, with Stacy Keach as the father.
Yeah, sure.
It was a great show. It was one of those shows that was really good, and then Fox retooled it, like, the second and a half season. And it got really good, if you know what I mean. But I loved him in that.
I actually do, because Titus is a regular podcasty appearance guy. So, you know, he mentions that from time to time.
Right.
Yeah, you, ladies and gentlemen, want to get your picture taken with Scott Farkas and Grover Dill.
Because
I know, so I do, but I got stuff going on this weekend.
We should drive out to the steel mill and get our pictures taken with those guys.
Yeah, it's only a 4-hour drive.
You're driving, so what do I care?
So the information about these conventions, of course, will be in the show notes, as will information about the soon-to-be-named network at soon-to-be-named-network.com or soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com, where you can get information about this show anytime that it comes out, Longbox Heroes After Dark, Fresher and Parlance, who are on an extended hiatus, apparently, Profane Argument, Puzzle Warriors 3, Paladins of Voltron, Aim Downsides Podcast, Talkin' Gimmicks allegedly are going to be coming back this week, with a review of the recent Powerbomb.tv event called Was Up. Hopefully the talk show will be a part of that package, you never know. And again, of course, Podvocacy, who is late this week for some reason. So they're going to be coming out, I think, the same time we are, if not already out as you're listening to this. Or anytime any of the folks on any of these shows appear on any other shows, the links to those shows will be on the soon-to-be-named network. It's synergy, it's poetry, it rhymes, it's something. So, moving along to digital sales and freebies, a couple holdovers from last week. The IDW sale on all their Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle stuff is still going on. Marvel still having a sale on all of their Max books. Dark Horse is having a sale on their Usagi Yojimbo books. Image is having a sale on their Top Cow branded items. And DC is having a sale on their New York Times bestseller books. And this is just kind of a retread of a sale that they had more recently. It's just a lot of sale. It's just a lot of trades. But it's stuff that they consider bestsellers or was on the New York Times list, which means you can get the entire run of Why the Last Man for less than $30. You can get every trade of Fables up to the most recent trade. You can get the entire run of Sandman in this sale. You know, perennial favorites that are always on every sort of DC trade collection, whatever sale, you know, Batman Year One, Batman the Killing Joke with all the extra material in there, whatever, Dark Knight Returns, and of course the Black Mirror, which is one of the best Batman stories in the last 10 years or whatever it is. So yeah, again, DC not really shaking things up too much with this sale, but obviously it's stuff that, in my opinion, should perennially be on sale.
Right.
You know, it's on sale so much. And again, I say it's on sale so much. It's probably on sale once every 6 to 7 weeks.
It's on sale more than it's not sometimes.
Right. That's what it feels like, you know?
Mm-hmm.
No new freebies, you know, from last week. All that stuff's still in the show notes, of course. And let's get into the stuff that we read from this past week. Todd, I'm going to ask you to kick things off, starting with your Soup or Sons annual, number one.
Yes, which is a Crypto and Titus the Bat-Hound super spectacular. Basically, this starts out with a adventure with Superboy and Damian version of Robin, Damian Wayne. And what I like about this is because it's mostly Crypto and Titus, is at least if you read this, you get to a great feel of the relationship, the fun antagonistic relationship between Jonathan Kent and Damian Wayne. They go on a little adventure, and then when it's over, we find out that Jonathan Kent has been keeping these list of crimes that he's been taking care of. And one of them is that animals have gone missing. So Crypto sees this and decides to get the Legion of Super Pets back together. And then from this point on, it's told mostly from like word balloons of animal sound. So there's no real dialogue other than a super special guest who shows up to explain that something has happened to the Legion of Super Pets, and you know why Crypto is trying to get them back together. And there's a tragedy, as all good stories have. And I actually just had a blast with all this, with all the super pets. I've always been a sucker for the super pets, but this is a quick read, but a fun read to me. And I just like how like light and airy Super Sons has been, as they're the weird two characters, like I said, antagonistic. But with this one, we get a touch of the super pets. I had a blast with this. I got, you know, for $4.99 annual, I was very, very happy.
I enjoyed this as well. Todd asked me to check this out, so I did.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I ask you, we are introduced to a few other super pets that I was unaware were a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Most notably, Plastic Man's Parrot?
I don't remember Plastic Man's Parrot in the Legion of Super Pets. Obviously, I remember Streaky, and then Clay Critter, who had something horrible happen to him that maybe have broken up the team. Clay Critter seems to be a character that was in the Legion of looks just like a character was in the Legion of Super Pets that was in the Legion of Superhero books called Prody. So I think they might have substituted him out because they're like, oh, we can't, whether they don't want to bring Prody into the, you know, the timeline or the continuity, but they needed to off somebody, so they made him look like it. And I'm pretty sure I was looking at some of the other characters. Who else was there? But I don't recognize the Plastic Man's parrot, which is fantastic.
Right, and they just threw him in there. It's like, oh yeah, here's a character that everyone knows.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it is. I'm not a big Plastic Man, history guy, but Bat Cow is in it too. I forgot.
Oh,
Bat
yes,
Cow.
Yes.
And we were talking about Bat Cow last week. Remember, I was like, is he still around? And there you go. He's in Super Sons. So what did you think, like, of the little bit of John and Damian? Did you enjoy that at all?
I liked it, but I'm not super familiar with John. I know what his deal is, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't. This is the first thing that I've read with him in it.
Okay.
The first thing, I guess, in recent, because he was introduced as like the Phantom Zone child.
Nope.
Okay. So this is someone different. Right. Okay.
Yes.
So this is the first thing that I've ever read of him.
Right. This is. Remember when Convergence happened?
Yes. Yes.
This was one of the Convergence books was a Superman book, and that was the Superman from the pre New 52, like the John Byrne Superman, and they had the kid in Convergence, and then this is him after Rebirth is over, like it's a couple years somehow. I'm not really 100% sure on all that.
Right.
But I do know that's where he first appeared.
So the internet tells me that Flexi, the plastic bird,
mm-hmm.
This would be the first appearance of him.
Well, you just have something to put Asa through college with now in a few years.
Right, when he becomes the biggest thing since sliced bread having been invented the year prior.
That's right.
I do want to say, of course, I don't know if you had mentioned the creative team on this. Peter J. Tomasi and art by Paul Pelletier. This is a beautiful book. And I know Pelletier has been on stuff that we've read before. I think he was on, Johns' Aquaman run.
Yes.
And I remember his art being really good there. And I think this being colored a little bit lighter really helped his art pop a little bit more. I thought the art in this book was beautiful. And not knowing, again, of course, as much about the relationship with Jonathan, because this being the first thing that I've read of him, I was not, you know, I know his origin, but I'm not up on the Superman stuff rebirth-wise, you know? And, you know, Damian's here and there, but he seems to be more in other books like this. And I think he's, like, in the Titans book and other stuff that I'm not reading. But Damian's character really hasn't changed all that much from pre-rebirth.
Right. My thing is I'm really enjoying the regular Super Sons book because it, in the end, I know, granted, it's Superboy and Robin, so that's going to be eternal. But this version, this is going to be iconic at some point. I really think this is going to stick and be one of those twosomes that everybody's going to remember. That's, I'm calling my shot here.
All right. So my book that I was most looking forward to coming out this past week was Kill or Be Killed, number 14, by Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. The conclusion to the current story arc. Dylan has gotten a little bit, the Russian mob has gotten a little bit too close to what he's been up to. And we find out even how close they've gotten in this issue where he lays a trap for the Russian mob and takes out their head guy, spoilers, in pretty short order. And that, of course, being a big part of the book. But the other part of this book is what he has been doing over these last 14 issues is now affecting his personal life. Right. And we're starting to see the toll that killing people has been taking on him, affecting his personal life. And specifically his relationships with his roommate and the girlfriend. And again, of course, a big revelation in regards to how and why all of this has been going on. Because a running theme throughout all of this is, it started off that Dylan saw a demon, a something, that told him, you will live if you give me one life a month. So Dylan would do his due diligence, pun intended, and find a child killer or someone who has done bad things. And then in a mishap with a police officer and attempting and another run-in with some of the Russian mob's girls, he's ended up killing more and more people and it's become more and more easy for him. And the demon has not been visiting him. And a lot of the book has been laid out, is this demon real? Or is Dylan crazy and imagining all of this? Well, in my opinion, it's both. I think the demon is real, and I also think that he's crazy.
A little from column A, a little from column B.
Yes.
I want a yes, because we've seen it in his father's artwork, and now there's hints that maybe other people have seen the demon. So does it run in the family, or is it like, you know, how like they say certain, you know, mental disorders run in families, or is he really seeing, I don't know. I think, you know, Ed Brubaker, I don't know if you know this, good writer, by the way, is walking a fine line with that and doing, cause I'm like, I'm not 100% sure either. And I like your theory that it's a little of both. But like I'm in for the long haul and I, like I said, I love the little changes that are coming in his everyday life, like being able to stand up for himself, like him talking about how, you know, I just took it. And like when people would bother me, I would just, I didn't want to be, you know, I didn't want any confrontation. Well, Dylan doesn't mind confrontation now, especially when he's got a sawed-off shotgun. That helps the situation. And like I said, he's not taking any more guff from his roommate and all this stuff. So yeah, it's, it's character evolution through these bunch of issues. And that's one thing that, you know, Ed Brubaker is fantastic at. So I'm really looking forward to more of figuring stuff out and seeing where things go.
Right. This is a great book. I highly recommend it. And it's one of those deals where a story arc just wrapped. They're taking a little bit of a break, not a huge break, and I'm sure by the time the next story arc begins, the trade of this will be available. Image is really good at that sort of thing.
Yes, they are. They have it almost down to a system.
Last but not least, one of the other annuals from this past week, and it is Batman Annual number 2, brought to you by the creative team of the single-issue story of 2017, Batman Elmer Fudd number 1, and that would be Tom King writing with art by Lee Weeks.
With a little help from Michael Lark.
Just a smidge.
Just a smidge, but he's in there.
Not credited on the website, but credited in the book.
Yes. He does pages 31 through 38.
So this is a little bit more telling of the backstory between the relationship of Catwoman and Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Which has been a linchpin of Tom King's story for the better part of the last year?
I think even longer. I think definitely a linchpin of the last year, but he set things up since like issue 1 as far as I'm concerned.
Right. I'll let you start off on this one.
This was a book that I actually wanted to talk about, and I was glad that you threw into the show notes so I didn't have to. Basically, it tells a story of past, present, and future Batman, and there's a catch to it and all, but it's his life with Selina. And it's a very touching tale about how, like, early on, she's trying to make him better and why, and the love that, like, Bruce and Selina have for each other, that Tom King does a really good job of, like, telling us why these two broken people are perfect for each other. And there's more of that in this. And it's touching and heartbreaking. Things go on, when you get to the end, I was just a bit of a mess, that is the best way to put it. But one of the real reasons, as great as this book is, one of the real reasons I want to mention this is because it takes place in the Batman Looney Tunes universe, wherever that is. Because at one point, Selina crashes the Batmobile actually into Porky's bar from the Batman Elmer Fudd one-shot.
Yep.
So I was so happy about that.
So, if you go back many episodes ago, and I don't know what episode it was, I was down on this whole Batman and Catwoman relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I was down on Batman and Catwoman, even the idea being entertained that they were going to get married.
Right.
This issue convinced me that it's a good thing.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
Right. Because it's not going to happen.
Oh, this is the cautionary tale of how good things could have been.
Right.
To me. Like, oh, that's this is...
Right, and then we get that tale of the future.
Right.
But I'm just saying, I don't like Batman in a relationship. I don't think Catwoman should be the one that he should be with either way. But over the last year, culminating with this issue, Tom King has done a fantastic job of, as they say, putting over Catwoman to be, at least in my eyes, the one who should be with Batman. Whether or not it's actually going to happen is another story, but it was a relationship that I've never liked, and now it is a relationship that I do like.
Even though they were married on Earth 2 all those years ago?
That's not real.
That doesn't, and they had a kid and became all that, you know, became Huntress. That doesn't count.
That's over there. That's not real.
That's not real.
No.
See, I was not against this because I do believe in the grand scheme of things, the only woman for Batman is Catwoman. Talia was a mistake on his part. that was more Ra's, like, oh, you need to marry my daughter and you're going to be the next Ra's al Ghul, blah, blah, blah. And he kind of did have feelings for her. But I think in the end, Bruce truly loves Catwoman, but it's never destined to be, because Batman can't be happy. We're going to believe that he can be. And when Tom King pulls the rug out from under us, we are going to be destroyed on this. That's my take on it. They should be together, but they never will. They're too, you know, it just, the situation will never work out for them to be together. And if Tom King makes that happen, by all means, wow, that'll surprise me. Cause I don't know if DC would be down with that. Unless Dr. Manhattan, once they get married, Dr. Manhattan makes that change too.
I wonder if they're going to make Dr. Manhattan's catchphrase this new thing that I thought of, called Wibbly Wobbly Timey Wimey.
Oh, that would be fantastic. Or what if he just whispers, no more Batman Catwoman?
Oh, I'd be okay with that too. Now, See, for me, but no. So, my deal with this is, prior to today, when the carpet would get pulled out from underneath the Batman Catwoman relationship, I'd say, good. This is the way that it should be.
Right.
But now, if and when the carpet gets pulled out from underneath them on their relationship, I'm going to be in the camp of everyone else who's upset.
Right. And you know what that is? That's the mark of a good writer, Joe.
Right. He's a very good writer, Tom King.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very happy to be reading this book, and I'm very happy to be finally on the Batman Catwoman train.
Yes.
All right. So that's what we read from this past week. Let's get into what we're looking forward to coming out this week. If you head over to longboxheroes.com every Tuesday around 5:30 Eastern time or so, we put up the poll post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out this week. Whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you get them in trade, whether you get them mailed to your house, however it is that you get your books, be forewarned, be forearmed, be ready for whatever's coming out. It's getting to be the end of the year, so it's a big week. Lots of stuff, lots of new books, lots of returning books, lots and lots and lots of stuff. The two things that Todd and I attempt to do here with the calendar year 2017 is, one, keep a running tally of all the books that we have purchased, broken out by publisher. Next year it's going to be by dollar amount. God help us all. And we attempt to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week as well. Todd has a hefty lead this late in the game over me with three more correct guesses than I. I'm going to look at his list, gut reaction, and say the book he's most looking forward to coming out this week is Rock Candy Mountain number 6.
It is not.
Oh, my goodness.
Do you want to take a second swing?
I only get one guess. That's the way this works.
It is the DC Holiday Special 2017.
To paraphrase a great man, GDMF.
Oh, you didn't see that one coming, did you?
No, I shoulda.
You know I love my holiday specials.
I know you love your holiday specials.
Let me guess. Is the book you're looking forward to most The Return of the Fix, number 10?
After a 7-month absence... The book I'm most looking forward to coming out this week, absolutely, is The Fix number 10.
Nice.
Where I think I might have DC Holiday Special. There you be.
I think I might have put it out of reach for you now.
Yeah, but I'm still not going down without a fight. I'm still going to keep trying.
That's right.
7 months, man. Oof. Nick Spencer must have been preoccupied with something over these last 12 months to make this 7 months late.
Hail Hydra.
What?
Hail Hydra.
Well, does he still have a Twitter? Anyway. While you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure to check out everything that we have there. And by everything, I mean everything that we've ever done on the internet exists in some sort of linky form over at longboxheroes.com. Be sure to click on that little button there that says store. You could purchase shirts and or stickers of our fancy logo from our good friend and DC Comics artist extraordinaire, who we forgot to mention, did art chores on a recent issue of Hal and the Green Lantern Corps.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, we should have gotten tipped off about that a little ahead of time.
Oh, I knew about it. I just didn't know where it was going to be jammed in. That's all.
But if you don't need anything there, of course you could purchase anything you want to your heart's content through our Amazon click through at the top of the page. And I do want to make a special shout out to everyone who purchased stuff over the last week. You know, obviously the holiday shopping has officially begun, and we had people purchase a ton of stuff over the last week, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
This is just a sampling of some of the things that were purchased. Someone purchased both volumes, the entire collection of Dan Slott's She-Hulk run. Someone purchased the Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 10 Volume 2 trade from Dark Horse. Someone also purchased ROM vs. Transformers number 5 and Transformers The Lost Light number 11. Someone also purchased Bags and Backs, or as they call them here, boards, for their comic books. It looks like Craig might be actually getting off his duff and putting his stuff together.
Mm-hmm.
Someone also went Muppet crazy, purchasing a Muppet calendar, Muppet Treasure Island, and a Very Muppet Christmas Movie on DVD. Someone also purchased Sweaty Rocks Women's Yoga Hot Shorts Shiny Metallic Pants. And I'm guessing the same person also purchased the Sismark Isis Wings Belly Dancer Costume Prop. Call it a hunch.
You'd never know.
Mm-hmm. And lastly, someone purchased a Retro Pinup Girls calendar, which comes with stickers, Todd.
Ugh, patooey.
If you purchase anything through our Amazon click-through and it's stickers, it's absolutely 100% getting a mention. If it's pins...
How would I know?
Todd will mention it.
That's right, if you stooge it off to me.
That's right. I ain't no stooge, brother.
That's your son.
The things I know. Oh, boy, he's the biggest stooge in the world.
But I'd like to thank everybody who clicks through so I can take that money and buy counterfeit art with it.
Oh, man. So looking at the list of stuff. Football season's almost at an end before it hits the playoffs and the Super Bowl. Was there some sort of kerfuffle with the ranking system this week, I noticed?
There was. It's all fixed now.
Mm-hmm.
That it was just adding the points. They were adding, cause when that happened, it was the Tuesday after last Monday night game, and they have to add the points to, like, they have to go to the next week, and there was a glitch, but all the points for the people are there now. I just checked. There was a glitch. It's all worked out though.
I'm still barely beating 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 people who stopped doing picks.
Well, that's because you have a crappy picker.
Mm-hmm. I am in a three-way tie for second to last with words, wink, and someone whose name is Preacher Show Still Rules, which is a lie.
It does rule.
Does not.
The airwaves.
Anyway. Thanks for everyone for hanging out with us and doing the football picks, of course. We always try to do something different, have some fun. The show is constantly changing for the most part. You know, the way that we do the show, we don't call things in the back. You know, we don't go over our spots in the ring, brother. You know, we got a fishbone of a structure, and then we kind of fill the rest in. And sometimes the meat that we put in there is salmon. Sometimes it's tilapia. Sometimes it's cornucopia, fish meats.
Oh, my God.
Fish math is right around the corner.
Oh, fish math season is upon us.
Fish math season is upon us as well. I think there's an episode of After Dark from last year that you can go look and brush up on what fish math is and how it affects you.
Mm-hmm.
And by you, I mean the royal you, and by the royal you, I mean Todd.
That's right.
So did we have any art attacks this week?
Yes, we had a Euronymous art attack. He sent in a Umberto Ramos Superior Spider-Man page.
I like those two things.
From issue number 7, that's what I'm getting from the cover that he sent us. So it's a page of, you know, Humberto Ramos goodness. I was not reading the book at this time, so you would probably know more about, like, if that's a character. Do you know what I mean? Who he is?
That would be Cardiac, who is in there. And he did a thing that I like where he has the page as he had purchased it and then the page as it appeared when it was printed in the book.
Right. All colored and word balloons and whatnot.
Yep, that's pretty cool. I like when the folks do that when they get those pages. That's really cool. Yep.
That's the only one that we had this week.
All right, so... let's do Todd and Joe Have Issues.
Right.
Well, then we'll do the contest, and then we'll do TV.
Right.
So, again, letting you take point on this since this was your book, Superman Annual number 11, written by some guy with art by some other guy.
Alan Moore, written by, and Dave Gibbons, art. They did a little they did a 12-issue series that was kind of famous together. I can't remember what it is, though. Got some mileage out of that. But it's the story of Batman, Wonder Woman, and Jason Todd Robin, which I always forget. As every time I remember this this story of Superman Annual 11, I always forget that it's Jason Todd, and it's an early appearance of him, too. Go to the Fortress of Solitude. This is pre-crisis kind of Superman, to give him his birthday gift. And they get up there and he has the Black Mercy on him, which is now a famous thing where it's a flower that gives you what you, makes you see and hallucinate the thing that's most important to you. And in this, we get a second story of Superman on Krypton that it hasn't been destroyed and he has a family and kids and everything. So we have the two stories going on of him in his hallucinatory Krypton storyline and Batman, Wonder Woman, and Robin trying to get the Black Mercy off Superman. And then Mongul shows up. We find out he's the one who gave it to Superman for his birthday and he's going to take over the Earth. And it's Wonder Woman versus Mongul while Batman and Jason Todd are trying to figure out how to get the Black Mercy off of Superman. Superman ends up getting it off himself pretty much by fighting it, you know, tooth and nail, and then decides to have a throwdown with Mongul, which is one of the only times I'm down with a scary Superman. Like, he was mad, boy, when it came out. And one of my favorite lines, and it always stuck with me, is Mongul saying, like, you stepped out of that imaginary, you know, wonderland that you were in. That must have hurt. That must have been like tearing off your own arm. And, like, I'll always remember that, like, that's what, you know, getting out of the Black Mercy must feel like. And Superman wants none of it. And in the end, it's the newly acquired sidekick, Jason Todd, who pretty much saves the day by dropping the Black Mercy on Mongul. All around a great story. One of my favorites. And how much it reminds me of Watchmen rereading it, seeing Dave Gibbons's art. Like, just, I don't mean like Watchmen-esque storytelling or anything, but how he like lays out panels and it just, it looks like what we were going to get in Watchmen later on down the line, but darker and more noirish.
This is an almost perfect comic book.
Mm-hmm.
Almost perfect. I love the parallels between the two stories, how the two stories kind of bleed into each other as they're happening concurrently to each other. As good as Alan Moore's writing in this is, I think Dave Gibbons' art is the absolute 100% star of this. Mm-hmm. As you had mentioned, having an angry Superman in those first couple times where he has the Black Mercy off of him and Dave Gibbons draws like almost like full page or like two panel shots of Superman. He looks imposing. He looks, as Todd mentioned, scary. And he looks awesome. And the other thing is, and obviously Mongol's a character that we've seen quite a bit over the last couple of years. He's always kind of like a third or a fourth string Superman villain, and he's transitioned over to be a Green Lantern villain in more recent years.
Right.
But Dave Gibbons draws Mongul as such a huge and imposing force. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm. He just fills up every panel that he's in.
Yes.
It's like, and you have these like little silhouettes of like Batman, Superman, and Jason Todd. And then it's like just all yellow Mongol filling up the panel with this purple outfit on. And him just like, tell the boy in the yellow to stop twitching. It's upsetting me. And you're like,
yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
Now, the other thing that I want to mention, of course, is, and I put it in a little write-up as well, this is pre-Crisis, right?
Right.
So this is also pre-Batman Year One, and this is also pre-Dark Knight Returns.
Right.
And I always like to throw in with, you know, I'll throw in the cover, and I'll throw in, like, a panel or two or whatever it is. And the one that I forgot, only because it's more so of a Superman story than it is a Batman story, there's the scene where Batman, Robin, and Wonder Woman land outside the Fortress of Solitude. And first of all, I don't know if this is actually his day-day, but they're there on February 29th.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think there was a leap year in 1985, so there wouldn't have been a February 29th.
Oh my god.
But is February 29th Superman's birthday?
Maybe it is.
Maybe it is. So Wonder Woman says, hey, let's get inside before we freeze. And then Robin slyly says to Batman, before us two freeze, dressed like that? And then Batman says, think clean thoughts, chum. And then the next panel is just, I don't want to even say a smirk. The left side of Batman's mouth, a straight line, and if you were to get a protractor or whatever it is to measure, a straight line is 180 degrees, right?
Mm-hmm.
The left corner of Batman's mouth is up like 2 degrees.
Right, just enough.
That's about the amount of joking that you would get from Batman today, but that's a little bit more of the Batman that I wish we got more of today. Mm-hmm. Where he'll make an off-the-cuff remark like that, but not, you know, it's this joke that I love, and the, I can't believe it's not the Justice League miniseries,
mm-hmm.
where the real Justice League shows up, and our Justice League, the Justice League International, are in the midst of some sort of chaos. And when the Justice League shows up, they're all like, oh, hey, John, hey, Martian Manhunter, hey, come help us. And Martian Manhunter's lamenting, is like, you know, you were a member of the team too, Batman, you can come and help. And he's like, well, they are calling for you, not me. And Martian Manhunter says, you must be loving this, or you must be enjoying this so much. And Batman responds, I'm Batman, I don't enjoy anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's the extent of the jokes I want out of my Batman. That's when it works.
It works when the next words out of someone's mouth can be, was that a joke?
Right.
Like, that's when, and they've done that in Justice League International a couple of times. It's like, blah, 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 and he's like, wait, did Batman just make a joke? And you're not quite 100% sure. And that's the great stuff about it. The great part about this was, like I said, I just do want to talk about it for a second. The scary Batman. The Batman who says burn, which they've done 1,000 times.
Oh, yes.
And then the Black Mercy. Do you want to know something? We did 2 annuals this week. We talked about Super Sons and Batman. There was a third annual we almost talked about if Batman annual 2 wasn't so great. It was the Aquaman annual. You want to know what the Aquaman annual was about, Joe?
What was the Aquaman annual about, Todd?
The Black Mercy being on Aquaman.
No way.
Yes, it was. And it was a story about how he was off in the future and he had a kid and he had a rip and he had to lose his family to come back and fight the Black Mercy. And I'm like, it was, and I didn't know this when we picked it because the books weren't out yet. It's the exact story of almost, with take away the birthday stuff, the inside the story of like the hallucinations is the Superman story. It's him having a family and having to destroy it to get out and be all sad about it later. And I was like, that's the kind of stuff. This is the kind of, it's the equivalent of Claremont and Byrne on X-Men. It's like, everybody has their Days of Future Past story. Everybody has their Black Mercy burn story. Like, either one. And that's how, like, Alan Moore is changing. For the good and the bad, because some people take away the wrong ideas from what this story should be. It's like, no, Superman only has this happen to him once in a great while. He gets this angry, and he wants to almost murder somebody. And he doesn't. He pulls himself back. Where I think the mistake is, like, and then, like, you get something like the New 52. It's like, well, it's a grim and grittier Superman. You're like, no. Once in a blue moon, but Alan Moore made it so cool, people want to write that, if that makes any sense.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's a great idea, but people got the wrong message, if I'm trying to put it the right way.
You absolutely, I 100% get, and I've never put it more succinctly, I've never heard it put more succinctly than that. That this is a story that's supposed to be special,
mm-hmm.
and it's special to so many people. That when they get into comics, they want to do their version of this.
They want to retread it, and it waters it down.
And it waters it down, and this is actually something that I was attempting to say to you before with After Dark, and I didn't have the right analogy to say it to you, but when everything is special, nothing is special.
That's, I always say this to one friend of mine, I always say, when everything's a super kick, nothing's a super kick.
Oh, right. You shouldn't be talking to that guy anyway. He's got horrible taste in shirts.
That's true. But
So the reason I say that this is a near-perfect comic book...
I was going to ask you that.
I like the stuff with Cal back on a non-exploded Krypton with his family,
mm-hmm.
his children and his wife. The political stuff... I know it's there for a reason, but it's not my favorite.
It's probably something that was going on in England at the time that he was...
Right.
You know, I mean, I know it was Reagan era time and stuff like that, but there's always something, you know?
Right. I think there was ways that you could have done that mm-hmm. without it taking up as much of that. I would have liked it to be more of the family than the political strife.
Right. I did like the fact with the Krypton story. Was the father that he didn't know, like the whole story that, like, because Krypton didn't explode, he was ostracized as a scientist because
mm-hmm.
everybody thought he was crazy. There's a lot, like, I don't know if you know this, Alan Moore had some great ideas at time, and I like that. And knowing a little bit about pre-crisis Superman, like the little things that were there, it's like, well, I'm going to go sit in the crater of Kandor because I need to get away and think. And that kind of reminded me of, Dr. Manhattan sitting on Mars alone. Like, you could see a lot of, like, stuff that was going to come out later. But, like, I just like the little nods of, like, Jaxxer, like, the Phantom Zone villain from later. Like, there was all these, nice little nods to, like, pre-crisis Superman lore that I only know some of. That I can only imagine, like, it's just littered with stuff if I knew more about it. So, great issue. Layered deep. Alan Moore knows his stuff.
Absolutely. So my book that we'll be talking about on Have Issues next week is JLA number 60, written by Mark Waid with art by Cliff Rathburn. Todd, is Santa a member of the Justice League?
He should be.
We're going to find out in this issue.
Oh my goodness, a holiday-themed issue.
That's correct. 'Tis the holiday season, and this is one that I saw come up as an underrated classic on many a list. I'm like, hey, I own that book. I've read that before. I remember that book. Let's do that one.
I wonder if I have that issue in my collection.
I hope so.
I'm just kidding.
Okay. So, before we get into TV talk... I do want to mention, of course, our contest that we had regarding the Quantum and Woody book. We have the New York Comic Con retailers exclusive, along with two of the elastic bands that say Clang on them. Wanted to get this contest wrapped up so we can get this out to you in the mail before Quantum and Woody hits store shelves. Just 2 weeks from now. And I do want to thank everyone who went back and amended their existing iTunes reviews, anyone who went and left a new review. There's going to be a future After Dark where we're going to get a little bit deeper into this. But again, of course, I do thank everyone who has left a review in the past or done what you could for this. Mm-hmm. So I do want to mention our two winners here. And you'll have to contact us, of course. And I really don't know how we could say that you are you. But I assume that if, like, your iTunes name, does that make sense?
Yes, I have a way, like, they could prove it if they wanted to.
Okay.
But so we could work around that. But yes, go ahead.
Okay, so the two winners chosen at random before we started recording the show. One is, and again, this is, now I want to say this, I had Todd choose two numbers at random, and I just assigned those numbers to the reviews that we've, you know, gotten since, and so on and so forth. So the first winner of the prize packet, is Havoc Rex, comic talk to punch you on the funny bone. Is his review, and it says, after listening to other podcasts based on comic books that ended up being vulgar and self-promoting, we never do the self-promoting stuff here, I stumbled on Longbox Heroes at its first episode. Now I listen intently and look forward to new episodes every week. Thanks for providing comic news I can listen to with my kids in the car, home, or secret lair. Don't tell my wife I have a secret lair. So Havoc Rex is winner number one. Winner number two is the Rock Out Kid, and that's R-A-W-K-O-U-T, Kid. His review says, Quantum Clang and Clang, Woody Clang forever. Oh, this is a fantastic comic book podcast. You should be listening. Go ahead, I'll wait. And there's a long ellipses. See, I told you it was good. But the title of his review is I Hate Pies. And if you've been following along with the controversy over on Puzzle Warriors 3, it's a man after my own heart.
All right.
So, Rock Out Kid and Havoc Rex, if you can contact us either in the comments section here, longboxheroes@gmail.com, preferably, and we'll get your address and we'll get this these out to you.
Yes.
Now, the other thing that was brought up to me, and something that I always forget because we always ignore iTunes and with good cause, we have people who listen in other countries, Todd.
Right.
We, in America, don't have access to iTunes UK, iTunes Canada, all these other countries' iTunes. We just don't have access to them.
Right.
Or if we do, I don't know how to access them.
Someone will call in and let us know how.
Well, I've kind of asked to the cosmos, and, like, no one seems to know.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure there is someone who does know, right? But because, like, so the next time that we do a contest, the next time that we do a giveaway, the next time that we do something, we're going to have to figure out another way to do it so that we can include all of our international listeners as well.
Right. And we will have another contest.
I'm sure we will. Todd's going to find the most counterfeit piece of art he has, and it's now yours.
Mm. Don't joke.
So, there's that. I think, is that everything?
Yes, I'm pretty sure, other than, do you want to put the, well, no, I was going to say you do what you're going to do.
Right. So TV stuff will be TV stuff. If you don't care about the Crisis on Earth X stuff, we bid you adieu. You've just listened to the 375th episode of Spectacular of Long Box Heroes. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week, and then we'll take a break, and we'll get into the Crisis on Earth X thing. All right. So we're not going to do a beat-by-beat of, like, here's what happened on Supergirl, here's what happened on Arrow, here's what happened on Flash, here's what happened on Legends of Tomorrow. Because it was, for once, all one big, giant, continuous story.
Right, which is what I loved about it.
Yes. And even still, they did a pretty okay job of filling you in if, by some chance, you only decided to watch one of the shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they did a good, like, in the beginning, they filled you in kind of in a little bit of a ham-fisty way, and then they left it with a good cliffhanger so that you would want to check out the next episode of whatever was next.
Right. I think they did it so well that they really should do it this way, is when they sell the DVDs of each season,
mm-hmm.
they should just pull that episode out of the set and just make one DVD of Crisis on Earth X. That way, if you buy Flash, you could just buy it and it sticks in there nice. If you just want Legends, but that's not how you sell things, if you know what I mean. You need to be like, oh, if I want to watch part two, I have to buy the whole Legends of, you know, the DC Universe or the Legends of Tomorrow box set so I can watch all of this.
Right.
But go ahead.
So the crux for our Earth people is Barry and Iris are getting married. Mm-hmm. And of course, this brings up feelings of... So they do a really cool trope at the very beginning where it's like, oh, who has an RSVP'd? And it's like, everyone who's going to be on the show! And then we get like little adventures of everyone. And like, here's your introduced to everybody. And they did it on the Supergirl episode because I'm sure there are people, since Supergirl technically takes place on a different Earth than everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably more people that watch just Supergirl and not the other three, if that makes sense.
Why?
Because they've probably watched Supergirl with the times that Supergirl has crossed over with Flash and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably a better chance that there are more people that watch... There's a higher consistency of people that watch some combination of Arrow, Flash, Legends than there is someone who watches Supergirl and Legends.
Right, you follow what I mean? Yeah, I misunderstood the first time and I got you the second.
Okay. Sometimes I gotta explain stuff in a way that makes sense.
Right.
So to put the introduction of these characters in Supergirl, I think, helps immensely. And while this is going on, of course, we are now being invaded by Earth X, which is the Earth in which the Nazis won.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, two of the three people in charge, the Fuhrer and his general, I think it was when they show up at the wedding,
mm-hmm.
they should have known immediately who these people were. They should have known we've dealt with other people from other worlds before. That is obviously Ollie wearing a lot of black. That is obviously Supergirl with the Supergirl insignia on her chest, but instead of an S, it's the SS.
I agree with you on that. That was kind of, I was like, what, I mean, other than
and they
maybe,
had to sell the surprise, like, oh my goodness, I didn't know.
I mean, maybe other than Ollie, because there's a ton of archers running around. Like, it could have been the Merlin from the other, you know what I mean? But Supergirl, definitely.
Yes.
Do you at least agree with that a little bit?
Yes.
Okay.
So we find out that the reason that the Earth Xers are invading our Earth is because evil Supergirl is dying. Her heart is becoming weak because she had a kerfuffle.
Right. They suck.
They suck. And they like, hey, there's another Supergirl over here. Let's just get her, expose her to red sun radiation so she's weak, and then steal her heart.
Right.
And that's pretty much their evil scheme.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot more stuff that's going on throughout the course of this. It's find out that they're in league with Eobard Thawne, which was awesome to see him back. I don't know. I don't want to go beat by beat for this, but I guess
right.
like favorite parts, least favorite parts, fun parts that you want to talk about. Overall, I thought this was awesome.
Right. This is one of the best comic book TV things I've ever seen.
Yes.
Like, it just flowed into one, into another. It was one big thing, and it was action. And I think what helped is you had so many different, basically, storylines where it's like, all right, so you have Lance, what do you call her, White Canary, and she's with Alex, Supergirl's sister. So you have that story, but then you have Firestorm, Jackson, Professor Stein, where you never got like, oh my God, I just move on. you know what I mean? Like where you get when you're on your own show where you're like, all right, with something with Barry or Iris is really annoying me and we have to watch it the whole episode. And they just keep coming back to it. Where there were so many rotating characters, it was like, all right, I'm interested in this storyline because we're only getting 2 to 3 minutes of it at a time, maybe less. And then they move on to the next one. Then it's an action sequence. And then we get a little more of this, these two characters over there. But at the heart of it, this Earth X crossover was really about relationships. It was about Felicity and all these relationships. It was about Barry and Iris's. It was about Alex and White Canary and their separate lovers who they've separated from. It was, I thought that was a really cool through line to it was it about relationships. I love that. I loved, Lance's father as the overacting, like, Gestapo guy. He's fantastic.
Mo Sizlak.
Yeah, Mo Sizlak, yes. And one of my favorite things was the, and I want to know if who you thought it was the girl who brought Barry water at the beginning of the wedding and said, like, don't forget to, like, say I do. Because she just stood out, baby.
I have no idea who that could or should be.
I have two shots at it.
Okay.
It is either Barry and Iris's daughter, Di Allen, who is one of the Tornado Twins.
Right.
Or it's Jenny, and I don't know how to say her last name, because it's spelled O-G-N-A-T-S, which is like Ognats, which is a Legion of Superhero character called XS.
Yes.
The letter X and the letter S, which would be Bart Allen's cousin, Impulse, coming back to watch the wedding from the future.
I like that.
That's my take on who that is.
I haven't dug up too much about that.
I just know that character from reading Flash, you know what I mean?
Right.
And they came back to visit, especially XS came back to visit our time many, many times.
Now, again, it was great. I loved it. I liked in the first two parts that Heatwave was just a clown.
Mm-hmm.
Every goofy thing to do, every goofy thing to say, he did it. It was fantastic.
Right.
Once they go off to Earth X, though, and they meet up with ultra mega baby face Captain Cold,
mm-hmm.
and leftover from Earth 1, Ray, the Ray.
Which I want to talk about that when you're done.
Okay. And then, you know, we get kind of a meeting there, a little heart to heart with Captain Cold and Heatwave. Captain Cold ends up sticking around, which I'm all about. And Wentworth Miller is such a great actor. Like, he was the baby face Captain Cold.
He reminded me of Citizen Cold from those, like, those flashpoints when he was the hero. You know what I mean?
But, like, so in Citizen Cold and the flashpoint thing, like, he had an evil, dark secret, you know?
Right, but the hero is.
I don't think this guy has an evil, dark secret. I think it was just in this world, he's the baby face.
I agree.
I didn't like the Ray's costume.
I love the Ray's costume.
I thought the helmet was atrocious.
Love the tiny hat that he had.
Again, tiny hat. The delightful wig that Earth X Felicity Smoak had.
Ugh.
Embarrassing. Again.
What?
They need to hire someone. I understand the budget constraints. I understand this is a four-part thing. There's a lot of metallo effects. There's a lot of red tornado effects. Hire someone who could teach these people listen, I know you can't get the best wigs. At least teach them to put them on. That's really all I'm asking.
What?
And you know what? I'll go you one. I'll go you a step less. One step less. Don't even show them how to put them on. Get them all a mirror and tell them to look at themselves before they go on camera. Maybe ask someone else for a second opinion. How high is this wig sitting off my head? 4 inches? All right, maybe I should pull it down a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
I don't watch Arrow, but I think Felicity Smoak came off as very unlikable in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
I think she was the heel in all of this. She was the one who threw Ollie off by causing such a scene at the reception held at the local coffee shop. Really
Jitters.
Right. Really skimping. I didn't want to get... Listen, they're not a sponsor of the show. I didn't want to mention them. But as good as Heat Wave was, as good as Captain Cold was, babyface Captain Cold, the MVP of this entire thing was not Supergirl, but the actress who plays Supergirl. She did such a good job in subtle facial things, subtle posture things between playing good and evil Supergirl.
Mm-hmm.
She had so many great lines. She came off so awesome. And unfortunately, I don't get a chance. I'm way behind on Arrow, way behind on Supergirl. But her performance in this makes me want to watch Supergirl.
I'm sorry, I don't want to step
on. No, I was going to say, so she does burn. She gets to say burn like in Superman Annual 11.
Mm-hmm.
And in the big climactic fight with evil Supergirl at the end, when she shows up outside the evil Wave Rider, and she says the line from Superman 2, where he's like, "I care to step outside, General?" I marked out. I went crazy.
Right, that was a great line.
So awesome. But again, like I said, little nitpicks about wigs and hats, as usual with any CW TV show.
Right. The only nitpick that I really had was Ray. The Ray was, they mentioned, they're like, "Oh, hey, I'm the Ray. We're from Earth One. What do you know? I'm from Earth One also. Okay, let's go destroy this portal, or let's go use this portal before they destroy it." How come nobody had the bright idea to go, "Wait a minute, Ray, you're from Earth One, right? How did you get here? Could we use that way to go home and they could destroy this thing so the Nazis can't take over other planets?" I was like, how did Ray get here? Nobody has like common sense to ask Ray how he was displaced from Earth One.
And I'm surprised that he didn't want to stay with babyface Captain Cold on Earth One.
Well, that's the thing. I think Captain Cold is only staying around for a little bit because he said, "I'll be back,"
right,
Ray, because they're lovers.
Oh, boy.
Yes, he says, "I have to go do this. I'll be back in a little bit.
My home planet and needs me."
Right. He goes, which I think was to help. He knows that, like, Heat Wave, like, because he was like, "Yeah, I had a friend here," and I think he knows what happened how he felt when he lost his Heat Wave, and he's going to go try and help him through whatever's going on with him and Captain Cold, and then he's coming back to Earth-X to help fight the Nazis.
Well, and again, of course, and this is, and again, not a nitpick, but it's something that we knew that was coming. You know, we knew that Eugene Grimby of the Wool Council was leaving the show. He ends up dying, and if anything, I want to give a secondary nod to the actor who plays Jax. I thought his scene with Grimby's wife and daughter was such an emotional scene. It did get dusty in the office when I was watching that episode.
There's that moment. There is that moment when she opens up the door and he just has that look.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you're like, I love the fact that in that moment, he didn't have to say a word. Do you know what I mean? He conveyed just how bad things were, and she has the breakdown. It was a really good scene.
Mm-hmm.
Even though Jonas Grimby's death scene was...
Eugene Grimby of the Wool Council.
Right. Was a bit over the top at the end. When he does the whole, falls back into the chair.
But you know what? I was okay with it. We knew he was going, so I don't think it was that big of a spoiler.
No, I don't mean a spoiler. I just mean,
it was
like, he's like, it's like I get my death scene. And I was like, dial it back, son. Just a tad. That's all I'm saying. You're not a terrible actor. I'm just saying, like, I think you hammed it up a little bit in the death scene. That's all.
But overall, if you haven't been watching, if you're listening to this, but you don't watch these shows, I say take the time out of your day and watch these four episodes. I really think that you would enjoy these.
And this goes
to show why the DC TV shows are serving the lunch to the DC movies on a regular basis.
Right. And in that, just towards the last couple episodes, when they have everybody and their mother just fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some really great shots of going back and forth. Oh, and I want to mention one last thing because we're all over the place. And I might be in the minority on this. I I was not happy seeing Wells as Eobard anymore.
Aww.
I prefer the other guy.
I like Eobard. The other guy too. But again, I am of the mindset if the only thing that's missing from this show is that if, you know, we mentioned before about how every character in the Watchmen TV show should be played by John Cena. Every character on this show should either be played by Tom Cavanaugh, Wentworth Miller, or both of them at the same time.
Right. But what my take on it is, and I know you believe in more Wells, all's Wells that ends Wells, as we say.
Right.
That we've said before. I agree. I love Wells, but I think because Wells is so awesome in all these other roles, I have a trouble now. Like when he snapped from good Wells in the first season to we find out he was Eobard, I was able to take him as evil. But now I've seen all these other wonderful Wellses that I'm having trouble getting evil Wells into my head, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
And either way, I just think, like, as great as Kavanaugh is as an actor, I think the guy who plays the original Eobard that changed his face to look like Wells is just so menacing. And I like that version better. And there was a line where he says, like, I put this on for old time's sake. And then later he says, well, who knows whose face I'll be wearing next? And I'm like, no, I don't want, like, you to be different actors playing Eobard all the time. Just either Wells or this guy. I don't want 15 other actors. Like, he's going to keep changing his face or whatever.
I think when he goes back with Damian Dharik and mm-hmm. Gorilla Grodd, he'll go back to that face that you're talking about.
Okay, good.
So you said you had another thing to mention in regards to I had mentioned Babyface Captain Cold.
No, okay. I don't. Well, I'm not a Captain Cold. It was the Ray that I was talking about, and I got that out.
Oh, okay, yeah, his helmet looks stupid.
It looks awesome. It looks just like the comic book. Mm.
So we have one more week of these shows, and then they're off for 5 weeks. So I'm going to put this to you, the listeners. What do you want us to do for these 5 weeks? Do you want me to get caught up on Archie, which is on the Netflix?
Riverdale?
Yeah, Riverdale. My apologies. Archie, Riverdale, same difference. Do you want Todd and I to maybe watch Runaways? And talk about that? Did you know that there was a second season of Outcast? Do you want us to talk about that? Or do you want this time just to be left alone?
You want a shorter show.
For the next 5 weeks, it'll be a shorter show. Let us know either in the comments section here for this episode over on longboxheroes.com. Or in an email at longboxheroes@gmail.com. Now, I know a lot of times tweeting is the easiest way to do these things, but I'll be honest with you, it's easier just to kind of keep track of everything, either in the email or in the comments. Things are bleeding over into Twitter as well. It'll be a little bit more difficult to keep track of, but we'll certainly try. And that's really the best I can say. And obviously, you know, mention it this week. And then on next week's show, when we do this mid-season finales of Flash and Legend of Tomorrow, we'll talk about what you want us to do, and we'll go from there. And make your voices heard, you know? If you were a person who regularly contacts me about the show by not one of those two methods, that's going to count.
Oh, boy. Feedback is always appreciated.
Feedback is always appreciated. I hate to be the type of show that begs, but it's very rare that we do, but this is only the one time this year we will beg and say, hey, please, let us know what you want us to do for the next 5 weeks.
Right.
I'd like to go to bed early.
I would, too. I would like you to go to bed early, too.
No, you wouldn't.
I really don't care what you do.
Exactly. But I also want to use this opportunity to get caught up on stuff that we've fallen behind on.
Riverdale is so good.
Right, Riverdale, or maybe you can make it. Todd, have you been watching The Punisher?
I watched all of that.
I haven't watched any of it.
Make Joe watch Riverdale or Punisher. Make me watch nothing. I've already watched them all.
Right, know that Runaways will be something that Todd and I both have not seen. Pretty much anything else that you vote for, or Outcast Season 2.
There was a second season of Outcast?
There was a second season of Outcast, Todd. where anything else is just going to be stuff for me to watch. But if it's stuff that you want to hear us talk about, like Riverdale, you know, it's more so what...
I would watch season one of Riverdale again.
Okay. And with something like Riverdale, it's going to be, I'm going to try to cram as much as I can in those 5 weeks. And, you know, like in week one, if I end up watching three episodes, we're going to talk about three episodes. If week two, I end up watching one episode, we're going to talk about one episode.
And Riverdale season one was a short season.
I think we talked about it. It was 13 episodes, I think.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you could do it.
All right.
You could do it.
All right. Anything else that we need to discuss here, Mr. Todd?
No, I think that's everything.
All right. We are caught up. We are up to date. Again, thank you, everyone, for listening to the 375th episode spectacular of Longbox Heroes. For Todd, this is Joe saying we'll catch you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
Boop! All right, we are here for football picks. It's week 14. We only have to do this four more times, including today. But I'm not here with Ace. I'm here with someone new. I'm here with Pete Knife. Say hi, Pete.
Hey.
This is Pete Knife. This is his new name to go with his new haircut. Nobody can see you, but that's all right. I like that pose that you just did. Are you ready to get this done?
Yeah.
He's playing this cool game on Google that teaches you how to code by playing a game. It's tricking you how to do stuff, but I don't want to tell you that. Yeah. All right, so who do you think is going to win, the Saints or the Falcons?
Saints.
The Colts or the Bills?
Bills.
The Bears or the Bengals?
Bengals.
The Packers or the Browns?
Packers.
The Cowboys or the Giants?
Giants.
The Lions or the Buccaneers?
Lions.
The Raiders or the Chiefs?
Chiefs!
The Vikings or the Panthers?
Panthers.
The 49ers or the Texans?
Texans!
The Jets or the Broncos?
Broncos.
The Titans or the Cardinals?
Titans!
The Redskins or the Chargers?
Chargers.
The Eagles or the Rams?
Rams.
Wow, that's a tough one. That's probably the best game of the week, some people will say. The Seahawks or the Jaguars?
Seahawks.
Oh, boy. The Ravens or the Steelers?
Steelers.
Last one. Patriots or the Dolphins?
Patriots.
Patriots. All right. Thank you very much for listening. Thanks for joining me here, Pete Knife. We're going to go back to your game here in a second.
Okay.
All right, say goodnight, everybody.
Goodnight.
Everybody.